Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight, and thanks to the library for the invitation. Today we'll be talking about sex on TV, what are we learning, and why does it matter? I'd like to start with a quotation, which to me captures much of what the process of sexual learning is like. So the quotation is, in North America, sexuality is always learned but seldom taught. And to me, this reflects a lot of what sexual learning is like. You may not get a lot of verbal instruction about sexuality, but you often can sort of cobble together a picture of what sexuality is, what sexual relationships are like from the various experiences in your life. I see it very much as putting together pieces of a complex puzzle. So first, I'll start with what is sexual learning like for American youth? Often when we think about sexual learning, we may think about sort of a birds and the bees talk, where a parent sits down nervously with their child and explains the facts of life. But actually, it's much more than that. It's a multidimensional process, and multidimensional in many ways. We know that the learning, for example, covers many issues. So it's not just the biology of reproduction, but it's issues about intimacy, affection, love, sexual identity. All those are components of sexuality and sexual relationships. We also know that the input comes in different forms, so not just a verbal one-time talk with the parent, but the information is nonverbal. We learn by watching. We learn by silence. It could be direct. It could be indirect. It could be accurate. It could be inaccurate, false, implied. So many different forms that we learn about sexuality. It's also multidimensional that the input is received across the lifespan, so not just the talk you get as a child, but they're learning about sexuality from the young ages, where you learn about affection and touching and what body parts are supposed to be covered and what the names of body parts are, up into adolescence and even into adulthood, we're learning about sexuality at all ages. And finally, it's multidimensional in that the input comes from multiple sources. So yes, we get a lot from our parents. Our parents are our initial sexuality educators, but we also get sexual information from other sources. We get it from our peers, our siblings, our teachers, and clergy members. So it really is a multidimensional process. So with this process, I ask you, could the media be a sexual educator as well? And the answer to that question, no suspense here, the answer to that question is yes. And there are a number of reasons why. Pardon? Surprise. I know, surprise. At the end of the talk, I walk away. No, no, it's not. What were we thinking? No, so it's yes for a number of reasons. Yes, because sexual content is everywhere. It's a very prominent part of the media. Analyses show that we get sexual content in about 85% of our movies, and 82% of TV programs, and in 59 to 85% of music videos. I very much see it as the sea in which young people are swimming. Tried to do this metaphorically, get it? Sea, young people swimming. Yes, the media are sexual content because exposure levels are really high. The media are a very prominent part of young people's lives. American youth spend 7.5 hours with the media each day. It's estimated that youth spend more time consuming media than doing any other activity besides sleeping. And so when we look at what kinds of media they're consuming, usually it's about 4.5 hours using TV on an average day, 2.5 hours with music, 1.5 with the computer, and then other media, which adds up to 10 hours and 45 minutes. And of course, that's a lot. A lot of that is multitasking. So they're watching TV while they're listening to the music, while they're on the computer, or whatever. So when you look at pure hours, it's about 7.5 hours a day. So it's a big part of their lives, and it does have a lot of sexual content in it. And finally, the answer is yes, because people actually report learning about sex from the media. Is that right? Yes, okay. when you ask people directly, where did you learn the most about sexuality, often their friends are one of the first things that they say, and then the media are often one of the second things that we say. We've been asking this question in our research for years, trying to get a sense of where people say they learn about sex, and we asked it again just this last semester of undergraduates. We asked them, from what sources did psych students say they learned the most about sex and sexual relationships? And lo and behold, we had like 500 or so students in class last semester. And 42.3% said they learned the most about sex from their friends. Then 15% said TV movies, 14% said multiple sources, they named a few things, 8.9% said mother, 8% said school teachers, 5.3% said websites, 2.5% said their fathers, and 2.7% said porn. But if we look at the media sources, which include porn, websites, TV movies, and even some of these multiple sources, we do see that people acknowledge directly getting a lot of their sexual information from the media. So yes. So how do we study the media as a sexual educator? What the typical research approach has been, the typical approach has often been to focus on TV content, what's out there in TV in terms of sexual behaviors, how often are people shown kissing and touching and things like that. They'll often study adolescent viewers, often teenagers, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. They'll assess their amount of exposure, how much they're watching TV, how much sexual content they have in their TV diets. And they often focus on sexual behaviors as the outcomes of interest. They'll look at their virginity status, have they had sex or not. They'll look at their age of sexual initiation, when did they start having sex. They'll look at their level of sexual experience, kind of like the bases that you remember when you were younger, see how far advanced they are in their sexual experience, and even their intentions to have sex in the future. So these are the typical sexual outcome behaviors that are studied in research, and the premise of this approach is sort of, does TV make them do it? Does watching these sexual behaviors in TV sort of make youth have sex earlier or higher levels of sexual experimentation? So with this question is media use linked to sexual behavior. Surprisingly, this issue has not been heavily researched. By the year 2000, there were probably more than 1,000 studies that looked at media and aggression. It's been researched since the 1960s. There's probably 1,000 studies that link media and aggression. But by 2000, there were like 5 studies that linked media and sexual behavior or looked at the connection between the two. So when trying to answer this important question, is media use linked to sexual behavior, the NIH said, well, we don't have enough money to answer this question. So the National Institutes of Health in the early 2000s issued a call for proposals. We need researchers. We need people out there studying this issue. So they issued a call trying to fund research, and they ended up funding about 5 proposals to study this issue. And then several research teams worked on this question, and they started producing research. So slowly, we've been getting an answer to this question. So that between 2000 and 2015, there have been 65 studies that have looked at some kind of connection between media use and sexual behavior. And again, the NIH proposal came out in the early 2000s, and then the studies they promoted, and then several people have followed from that studying this question as well. And with these studies, the data are showing that, yes, we do see significant contributions between media use and sexual behavior. It is linked to earlier age of sexual initiation, it's linked to greater levels of sexual experience, experimentation, and it's linked to greater intentions to have sex in the future. So we do see these sex behavior connections. But with this findings in the literature, there have been some emerging questions and concerns that I've had. Because if you see these links between TV or media and sexual behavior, those are two really broad things. And I'm wondering, how are they linked? Why are they linked? I mean, it's a very broad process to imagine watching TV and all of a sudden going to have sex. I mean, what are the things in between that link these things? So we have some emerging questions and concerns that we've been trying to address in our lab. One, we think that sexual content is more than just the behaviors that people have been studying. What about sort of the themes and messages that are presented on TV? So it isn't just watching people kiss and watching people touch, but what's being said about sex and relationships. That could be an important component that really hasn't been studied much. We also anticipate that this content is likely to affect things beyond people's sexual behavior. It could affect their beliefs and their expectations about sex, what they think other people are doing, and these expectations could affect multiple components of their lives. We also think that there may be more than exposure involved. A lot of the research has been studying how much TV they've been watching, how much, but it could be multiple pathways of influence. Maybe it's not how much you're watching, but if you're identifying with the characters, if you think it's real, do you connect to the images? We also think that it's more than just TV. A lot of the research focuses on TV, but what about films, magazines? And finally, in our lab, we talk about, well, sex is not just sex. We acknowledge that much of the sexual content, both in the media and in society, is heavily gendered. There's often different sexual roles and expectations for women than for men. And the sexual scripts often play out like this. For women, they're often expected to be less interested in sex, more interested in love and relationships. They're supposed to act more sexually passive, wait for the person to ask them out, to come to them. They're supposed to use their bodies and looks to attract sexual attention. They're supposed to be, and their bodies and looks will be sort of their biggest asset. They're also supposed to be the responsible ones and to set the sexual limits, to keep things from moving too far, moving too fast. And finally, there's little emphasis in these cultural sexual scripts on their own desire. Their goal is to be desirable to others. They're supposed to be sexually attractive, but not too sexually active. Now, what's the script for men? The script for men is that they're expected to be interested in sex. It's part of being a man, and it proves and shows their manhood. They're expected to take the initiative, to be the aggressors, to ask women out, to make the first move. They're expected to focus on women's appearance. That's her biggest asset. And they're expected to avoid commitment and emotional attachment. You know, sort of just get in, get out, or all those sort of crude euphemisms that are sort of part of guy culture. So it isn't just one uniform vision. There's just different sexual scripts for women and for men. And whether you buy into these scripts or not, you may not believe it. You may not buy into it. Oh, sorry. But a lot of our behavior is policed by these scripts. And these scripts, this frame of these two scripts together, they call this sort of the heterosexual script. And these gender scripts can be very constraining because they're often policed and judged by them. And I see them sort of painting both women and men into sort of these narrow boxes. And so for women, if you step out of the box, you know, do something either not trying to look attractive, or being too interested in sex, you risk being labeled a frigid, cold, a prude if you're not interested, or slut, whore, tramp if you're too sexual. And for men, if you step outside of that box, maybe by being more interested in romance or affection, you risk being labeled soft, whipped, and having your manhood questioned. So these gender scripts are very constraining, and it's a big part of sexuality and sexual relationships. Okay, so then acknowledging that there's these gender components, I want to just give you the four little pieces I'm going to try to cover in the rest of the presentation. One, we want to think about the themes and messages that, not just behaviors, and we're wondering what are the common messages about sexuality in mainstream media. Second, we wonder, well, how does regular exposure to these messages affect young people's sexual beliefs and expectations? The third question we try to address here is, what are the consequences of holding these beliefs for our sexual health and relationships? And finally, one of the messages that you'll see over and over again that keeps coming up is sort of how women's appearance is a big feature, and that women are sort of treated as sexual objects. So we've also started to ask, what is the impact of the media sexual objectification of women? So we'll see if I can cover each of these in just a few minutes and give you a flavor of some of the research we've been doing in our lab to answer these questions. So the first question are, what are the common messages about sexuality in mainstream media? When I first started addressing this issue, it was like 20 years ago. Oh my goodness, it just seems like the other day. So 20 years ago, we were wondering, what are the themes and messages? If people say they turn to TV to learn about sex, what are the messages there? What could they be learning? So one of the first studies, we looked at some of the sitcoms and dramas that teens were watching. And we analyzed the dialogue in these sitcoms and dramas. So we analyzed 12 programs that were popular among children and adolescents during this time, things like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Simpsons, which is still on, and Beverly Hills 90210 in its original incarnation. And we analyzed all the dialogue between the characters for reference to common cultural scripts about sex. So the dialogue was coded using a list of 17 themes about sexuality that are common in our culture. And we focused on every interaction between the characters. So if two characters got together to talk about something, that was an interaction. And if they cut to a different scene or other characters came, that was a different interaction. So we looked at every interaction between the characters. And if something about sexuality was referenced, we said, yes, it's referenced. And then we'd code it for what kind of theme it was. And if it wasn't referenced, no. We would just keep track of how many interactions there were. So what we found overall, we found that overall 29% of the interactions between the characters contain messages about sexuality, which is a pretty high percentage. It's almost one out of three times that characters got together to talk about something. There's some kind of sexual reference, joke, connotation made. And it did vary across the shows. These were some of the shows. Some of the percentage is really high. The show Martin had 49% of the interactions had some kind of sexual reference. Blossom, which some of you may or may not remember, okay, had 58.8% of the interactions had some kind of sexual joke content reference. So we do see as a prevalent part of the media diet for teen shows. So what are the themes and messages that we saw? These were some of the many themes that we coded for. And so the themes in yellow, cultural scripts about sex, these are very general themes. Sex is procreation, it's a cultural script about sex. Openness and intimacy are key to relationships, common cultural script. Dating is a game, a competition is a cultural script. And then in blue, we had scripts that were for men. Men are supposed to want sex, men are sexual initiators and aggressors, part of the heterosexual script that I talked about. And then we had themes for women in pink. Women are valued for their sexual appearance, and women are sexual limit setters. So we coded the references for whether they hit these themes or other themes, and we found that the three things that were most common were that dating is a game and a competition. That came up a lot of playing, strategizing, manipulating, one-up, trying to hide your true feelings, not let people know what you're really thinking, a lot of game playing, recreational, treating sex like a sport, dating is a game. Another common theme was that men are supposed to want sex, so no matter what they were doing, they were often talking about needing sex, wanting sex, and when are they going to get it next, and things like that. And then finally, we saw a lot of references to women being valued for their sexual appeal. So no matter who the woman was, mother, sister, teacher, doctor, there were a lot of comments about her appearance, you know, her rack or whatever, a lot of comments about women's sexual appearance. So those are the themes that we saw when we studied it 20 years ago. So you may be wondering, Monique, that's 20 years ago. Are these themes still prominent? What's out there now? So these are data from some current studies that have looked at TV sexual content. There was a study that came out in 2007 that looked at primetime TV programs that teens say they watch the most, things like Family Guy, to look at references to those gender messages and sexual scripts. And they found 15.5 references per hour to some of those themes in the heterosexual script that I pointed out to you. So boom, 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 quite a few references in the teen shows. A study came out in 2007 that looked at reality dating programs, things like The Bachelor and Blind Date, to see what kind of scripts and messages were on those shows. And they found 5.9 references per hour to women as sexual objects, and 5.2 references to dating as a game, competition, players, 3.6 references per hour to men as sex-driven. And then the most recent study we saw was one that just came out in 2015. I think it's still an online publication. They looked at 9 reality dating programs. And again, they found that 37% of the scenes featured sexual content. So even more than my number, my 29%, they found 37% featured sexual content. But again, a lot of it was like flirting and suggestive dancing and touching and closed mouth kissing and things like that. So that's kind of what the sexual content looks like in some of the current analyses. I want to give you an example. Reality TV is very big. So here's an example from one of the reality TV shows, Jersey Shore.
I got girls back here almost every night. There's not a time that I don't have girls coming back. Girls love the situation. This is the crib right now. We got upstairs. Probably going to go in jacuzzi.
Okay. Do you guys need, like, any like, we're going to get towels. Do you need anything? We're good.
We're good. I don't even have a bathing
suit. I feel you on that, but really, we're going to have fun. We're going in underwear. That's what's going on right now.
I'm really not going in, so. I am not.
No. Nope. Your pants on.
I'm gonna go in my pants?
Yes.
And then what am I gonna drive home in?
You turn the jacuzzi on? Look what I got.
I'm not going in with my pants on. I'm not going in
with
my pants.
You're going in with something. Here you go.
Then give me a pair of shorts.
I feel you on that. Hold that.
They were acting kind of stupid, but we just made the best out of the situation like we always do. Just dry it out.
So a bra is the same as a bathing suit.
Exactly.
An awesome night.
Salud.
It's so good to be in Italian.
Yes, exactly.
In Italian. Well, I'm hooking up with my girl, Polly's hooking up with his girl, and we're gonna have sex. So, you know, it's a situation.
We have both the chicks in a bed.
They're in bed side by side. So that's just a scene from the show, Jersey Shore. They met those women at a club, and of course, take them back to their place, have champagne, get in the hot tub, and have sex. So that's an example of current scripts on reality TV. One of the other things that we did was look at music videos, because we were starting to study sexual content in the media, and everyone says, oh, Dr. Ward, what about those music videos? High levels of sexual content, what's there, what can kids be learning from music videos? So we did a study that, we did the study in 2000, it didn't come out until 2012, where we looked at the 70 most popular BET music videos from one of those year-end countdowns, and we coded each video for the presence, yes or no, of 18 sexual behaviors. What sort of behaviors were shown in these music videos, very visual. And we also coded the level of dress or undress of each of the main characters or performers in the video. Try to get a sense of, are they sexually provocative in their clothing, you know, lingerie, bathing suits, or regular clothing. We did find sexual imagery in 84% of the videos, so a very high level of sexual imagery in the videos. These are some of the 18 behaviors that we coded for, things like holding hands, kissing, women dancing sexually, men dancing sexually, sexual gratification, and implied intercourse. These are some of the things we coded for. And in all the videos overall, some of the top themes are women dancing sexually, which you can imagine what that looks like. I'll show you in a minute. And more so in videos, not demonstrating. videos by male artists. And also sexual gratification of women was very high, where they just focus in on a specific body part. They show a crotch shot, boob shot. She's not a person, she's just a set of boobs. That occurred in quite a few of the videos, and in many of the videos by the male artists as well. And so we also looked at the kind of dress that they were wearing, and we did see that the clothing was often very provocative, more so for women than for men. 71% of the female clothing was very provocative, swimsuits, bathing suits, lingerie, super short skirts, versus 35% for men. So women were much more in provocative clothing than men are. So again, I'll show you an example of a clip that we coded in this content analysis. And it is from 2000. I was editing it last night, and my daughter said, Mom, that's so old. People don't dress like that anymore. Okay, so the video is from 2000. This was, yeah.
Shorty, what up? Come on. Shorty, say what's your price? Just to back it up, you can hold my eyes. Now let's say you owe me back like you owe your rent. Owe me back like it's money I spent. Pay me back when you shake it again. Dawn all the time with all the shine. You small time, I ball with mine. Lynx, Minx, Bentley, Azor with mine. My jams bump out to the borderline. UK hot with it, blue spots with it. Every continent love when I spit it. Corners the blocks, even the cops feel it. Brothers on lockdown on the cock feeling. It's real in the field.
Okay. So that's just, I think, 30 seconds or 40 seconds. But it gives you a flavor for what some of the videos were like, the sexual dancing, objectification, focusing in on women's body parts. So that gives you a sense of what some of the sexual content is like that young people are exposed to. I showed you some TV shows, our content analyses, music videos. You get a sense for some of the themes that come up over and over again in terms of men being sex-driven, women being sexual objects, sex being very sort of prevalent and prominent part of their lives. So then, of course, we wondered, well, how does exposure to this content affect young people's beliefs about sex and sexual relationships? And we've studied this question in a few different ways. One of the ways has been through survey data, where we test contributions of regular, everyday media use. So we get a sense of how much media they're consuming, what kind of media they're consuming, and is that consumption linked to their attitudes and beliefs. So with the survey method, we'll have items in our survey that look at their media use, and we'll look, for example, at their exposure to a list of TV programs, or we'll ask them how many hours a day they spend watching music videos on an average weekday, Saturday, Sunday, to get a sense of some of their exposure. We'll also look at their involvement, how connected they are to the media. So we'll have questions, for example, that ask about, if you hear me if I walk away from the mic? Okay. We have questions that ask about the extent to which they use TV to learn about the world. So maybe those who are using it more actively to learn might be more accepting of the content that they see. We also look at their how much they identify with popular characters, so we'll give them a list of characters from TV shows, and we'll indicate how much they identify with them. And then also we ask if they see the content as realistic. Does it reflect everyday life to them? Does it seem like people that they know and things like that? So we'll have these kind of questions in a survey. And then we'll link these media use variables to their beliefs about sexuality. We'll link it to their assumptions about what others are doing, how common they think certain behaviors are in the real world. And we'll also link it to their own beliefs and values. What do they think about sex and dating? Is it a game? Are women sex objects? Things like that. And then for these beliefs and statements, we usually give them a scale, and they indicate how much they agree with the statements. So they have like a 1 to 6 kind of strongly disagree to strongly agree kind of scale. I mentioned one of the themes that shows up a lot in the content is that women are sexual objects. So then we have survey items to see if they agree with this. So things like using her looks is the best way for a girl to attract a guy. Agree, disagree. Women should spend a lot of time trying to be pretty. No one wants to date a woman who has let herself go. Agree, disagree. We also have statements that look at the idea that men should want sex, that male part of the sexual script. Something's wrong with a man who turns down a chance for sex. Agree, disagree. And then we have statements that look at the notion that dating is a game, a competition. Dating is basically a game, a battle of the sexes, where both men and women try to gain the upper hand and manipulate each other. Agree, disagree. And then we also have some questions that look at their traditional gender roles in general. Things like girls should have the same freedoms as guys. So we can link their media use to their beliefs on these statements. So in one of the earlier studies we did, we tested with college students, and we looked at as regular media use associated with students' beliefs about gender roles and sexual roles. And we tested this with 259 undergraduates, and these are the results for women. The results for men were pretty similar. So these are our media variables in the study, and those are the outcome variables that we looked at, and the stars and the red numbers mean that the connection between the two was significant. So the more they reported watching our long list of TV sitcoms and dramas, the more they endorsed traditional gender roles, the more they endorsed notions that women are sex objects, mentioned with sex and dating is a game. We didn't see any results for their watching of soap opera, but we did see results for music videos, and also for their viewing about the world. The more they say that they watch TV to learn about the world and learn how people behave, the more likely they were to endorse all those kinds of statements I gave you earlier. And the same thing for identifying with the characters. So we saw significant contributions and correlations in a number of levels. So again, that was me in 2002. So we're wondering, how are things today? And so I looked for one of the most recent studies that looked at media and sort of some of these beliefs. And it was one that just came out in 2015 that looked at endorsement of the hookup culture, the sort of notions about casual sex and, you know, no commitment, get in and out, and hooking up is fun. So in this study, they surveyed 135 undergraduates, and they surveyed them in September at the beginning of the school year, and then in May at the end of the school year, so they could see if their media use in September early on is linked to their beliefs about the hookup culture. And they gave them a list of 34 TV programs and 19 magazines that were high in sexual content to see how often they read them and when they were exposed to them. And then they gave them statements about the hookup culture and do they agree or disagree. And there were statements like, hooking up is not a big deal, and hooking up makes me popular, to see if these are connected. And lo and behold, they did find a connection. They found that the more they watched sexual TV programs, the more they endorsed those hookup culture statements, and the more they read the sexual magazines, the more they endorsed the hookup culture statements. And the results here were actually much stronger for men than for women in this study. And then a final study I wanted to share with you that looked at the sort of the beliefs and expectations deals with the expectation side. Because it may affect, the media content may shape what you believe, but also may affect what you think other people are doing. You know, is this normative? Is this kind of, oh, I guess everybody's doing that kind of stuff. So we wondered, does media use shape their expectations about what is regular and what is normative? And so to test this kind of question, what we'll do, in this particular study, we tested with 811 undergraduate women and men, and we present them with some behaviors and ask them what percentage of people your age, so what percentage of people around age 19 have done these things? What percentage of men, for example, have had sex on the first date? Or what percentage of men by age 19 have had 2 different sexual partners in a week? or have 10 or more sexual partners. And we ask them to estimate 0 to 100, 10%, 40%. And then we compare the kind of estimates that are given by those who watch a little TV, moderate amount of TV, and high amount of TV. And the results here are from daytime TV, which was talk shows and soap operas, but the results for movies were very similar. So here are the results that we found in our survey of 811 undergraduate women and men. We did find the kind of increase that you might expect, that the higher levels of TV watching are linked to higher estimates of these behaviors. So those who, you know, say, who watch a little TV say, well, about 20% of men have had sex on the first date. If you watch a high amount of TV, 25% or more. So with each level of TV watching, we see greater estimates of the kind of sexual things that people think are happening in the real world. So not only does it shape your beliefs, but it shapes your sense of what other people might be doing. But you're saying, okay, those are just associations. You know, we know that it's to say thing A causes thing B. You really need an experiment, right? Because these are just things that are connected. Watching TV is associated with these beliefs. We don't know if they cause those beliefs. Maybe people who have those beliefs just watch more TV. So in order to say that they may be contributing to or causing these attitudes, we run experiments where we test their exposure to specific content. And here we wonder what happens when we show young people specific sexual content. So we've run several studies where we'll have an experimental group who will be exposed to some of the common sexual stereotypes, like in those TV clips I showed you or in the music video I showed you, and they'll be exposed to images of women being treated as sex objects, men sort of being players with all kind of women around them, or a heavy focus on the importance of appearance. Or they'll watch control groups. They'll be exposed to non-sexual content from some of the same TV shows, or they'll be exposed to non-sexual content from videos by similar artists. And then we'll give them attitude statements afterwards to see if they believe these things about women or men or sex or relationships. Everyone following? Okay. So I'll give you a few examples of what we found here. First study we did with college students, and we wondered, does exposure to specific content lead students to more strongly endorse the sexual themes that are depicted? Again, these are the results among women, and we found significant results in every condition. So here, the gray bars are the experimental ones, the people who saw the sexual clips, and the blue bars are the people who saw the non-sexual clips. And this represents how much they agree with statements. So those who saw clips of women being treated as sex objects, they watched four clips of women being treated as sex objects, were later likely to endorse statements that, yeah, women are sex objects, more so than were those in the control group. Same thing, those who saw clips of that men who sort of want sex and are focused on sex were more likely to agree with that kind of statement than were women in the control group. And same thing for women who saw four clips with dating being treated as a game and people strategizing and manipulating were more likely to say, hey, dating is a game, a battle of the sexes. So this is the study that we then tried with high school students, because these were college students, and one of my graduate students was wondering would high school students think the same thing or have the same result. So we showed them the same clips to a group of high school students. We had 244 students of high school age, 14 to 18. We showed them the same clips. And here we saw significant differences, but only for one of the conditions. For the condition where women are being treated as sexual objects. So those who saw those clips were more likely to say, yes, women are sexual objects than were those in the control condition. And they were also more likely to endorse traditional gender roles in general than were those in the control condition. And then the final experiment I wanted to share with you was one that we did with those music videos. Again, I showed you an example of what the music videos are like, and so we're wondering, what are students' beliefs like if they're exposed to a bunch of music videos like this? So we're wondering, does watching the stereotypical music videos lead to stronger endorsement of sexual stereotypes like the ones that I talked about? So we did this study with a group of 152 black adolescents who watched, I want to say, four or six sort of sexual music videos, and then some who watched no sexual music videos. And we did see a strong result. Those who watched the sexual music videos are more likely to endorse the sexual stereotypes about women and men than were those in the control condition. Okay, so that gives you a sense of media use is linked to their beliefs and their expectations. We see it with our survey data. We see it with our experimental data. But, you know, so what? So they have these beliefs. They think these things about sex. Does it have any consequences? So our next set of studies wondered, well, what are the consequences of holding these beliefs for young people's sexual health and relationships? One of the things that we wondered were consequences for men. We saw a lot of issues with men sort of being sex-driven and things like that. And we know the whole sexual script for men talks about their emphasizing non-relational sex and casual sex and sort of being a way to prove their manhood. So we're wondering, how does that affect men? Does it make them seek out more casual sex partners? Does it make them use protection more or less? And so we thought we would test this question in a large sample. So with this study, we tested 796 heterosexual undergraduate men. So all these are all men that are having relationships with women. Then again, around 19 is their average age. We looked at how much they watch movies, mainstream movies. We gave them a list of movies and how much they read popular men's magazines. Then we looked at their beliefs about non-relational sex, casual sex, and dating is a game, the kinds of messages I showed you before. And then finally, we looked at their behavior. We looked at their number of sex partners overall, their number of casual sex partners, and their use of protection. Are they being risky, or are they protecting themselves regularly? And with this group, we did find most of the results we expected. We found that their movie and magazine viewing did affect their acceptance that, you know, non-relational sex is okay, casual sex is okay, and the more they endorsed those kind of beliefs, not surprisingly, the more sexual partners they had, the more casual sexual partners they had. So we are seeing some connections for men. So I just want to share with you a couple other studies we've been testing. So that's one result, the number of sexual behaviors. One of the other things that we're thinking about is the gender dynamics in that sexual script that I talked about are problematic in a number of ways. We know that the heterosexual script that I mentioned kind of outlines a sort of an adversarial relationship between the sexes, right? Men and women are adversaries. There's a whole battle of the sexes notion. And it also creates this odd power dynamic where men are sort of supposed to one sex and be the aggressors, and women are supposed to be passive and limit setters. And to me, that sets up an odd power dynamic that could potentially legitimize sexual violence against women. So we wondered, might that be the case? You know, this odd power dynamic that's worked out in these scripts, could that be in any way affecting people's acceptance of violence against women? So here we wonder, does media use predict men's dating violence attitudes and perpetration, again, via these gendered sexual scripts that the media seems to be promoting? And so we tested this kind of question with a group of 341 undergraduate men who all have dating experience with women. And we give you a sense of how we measured their endorsement of these gendered sexual scripts. We measured their traditional gender roles in the ways that I talked about before. We also measured their sense of the traditional male role, things like guys should not let it show when their feelings are hurt, traditional male role, or I think it's important for a guy to act like he is sexually active even if he is not, male role. We also looked at their direct endorsement of these sort of adversarial sexual beliefs that men and women are adversaries, battle of the sexes. Things like girls are sweet only until they get the guy. And finally, we looked at their direct endorsement of the heterosexual script with statements like guys want sex and girls want relationships. It sets up the two scripts. And men should be the ones to ask women out and initiate physical contact. So we looked at their agreement with these kinds of statements, and then we also looked at their acceptance of dating and sexual aggression. And we had three measures here. One was a measure of rape myth acceptance, which is myths about victims of sexual assault and how they participate or not. So the statements like, one reason that girls say they were raped is to get attention. It's a myth. And another myth, girls who don't wear bras or who wear short skirts and tight tops are asking for trouble. We also looked at their acceptance of dating violence, physical violence against women. Some girls deserve to be slapped by their boyfriends. Sometimes jealousy makes a guy so crazy that he must slap his girlfriend. And then finally, we actually looked at their perpetration of aggression against a dating partner using a digital device, like a cell phone or their laptop or computer. You hear about that, cyberbullying and things like that a lot these days. So we wanted to incorporate that. So for here, participants indicated how many times they had done each of a list of 15 behaviors to a dating partner using the internet or a cell phone. Things like threaten to publicly distribute an embarrassing picture, or set messages pressuring them to engage in sexual behavior. And we had a whole list of 15 behaviors like that to see if they had engaged in it. So then we tested, do these scripts predict men's aggressive attitudes towards women? And that they did. Our model sort of worked in a very nice way. We found that certain kinds of media use were linked to greater acceptance of those gendered sexual scripts. We found that the more they watch reality TV, movies, and music videos, the more men endorse those gendered sexual scripts. But the more they watch sitcoms, the less they endorse the scripts. But the more men were endorsing those scripts, they offered greater acceptance of dating violence if they endorsed those scripts, greater acceptance of rape myths, and more actual perpetration of digital dating aggression against the dating partner. Let's see, okay. And then the last way that we've tried to look at the so what question was to look at how these things might be working for women, right? A lot of the sexual scripts that I've talked about from the media talk about women as sexual objects. They're just pretty things to be looked at. So it doesn't give them much agency as a sexual subject to go out there and advocate for herself and feel comfortable with herself. So we're wondering, could the media be affecting women's sense of sexual agency? So we wondered, does media use contribute to women's acceptance of those sexual scripts, which in turn could affect their sexual affect and their sexual agency? So we tested this question among 403 sexually active heterosexual undergraduate women. These are women having relationships with men. And we looked to see whether how much TV they're watching and whether they think TV is real contributes to those gender sexual scripts that I laid out in the previous slide. And this buying into those scripts affect women's sexual assertiveness, making them less likely to communicate their needs, feeling like they can't speak up for themselves. Does it affect their sexual affect, making them feel less comfortable with the sex that they're having, less comfortable with their sexual selves? And does it affect their confidence in their ability to protect themselves? So this just gives you a sense of how we measured those features of sexual agency, because it's kind of an odd construct. So we did look at sexual assertiveness, how much they can communicate their desires or lack of desires to their partner. So statements like, I communicate my sexual desires to my partner, or I find myself having sex when I do not really want to, which would be a not assertive statement. We looked at their affect, you know, do they sort of own their sexual experiences? Do they feel comfortable, or do they feel negative and shameful about their sexual experiences? Whether they're having them or not, they should feel comfortable, they should own it. So we looked at their current level of, their feelings about their current level of sexual experience, how uneasy, sad, confused they are about their sexual experience, ashamed, embarrassed, things like that. And finally, we looked at their confidence that they could do 5 safe sex behaviors. Could they advocate for themselves by doing things like talking about using condoms or contraceptives with a potential partner? Do they feel confident that they could do that? So these were the connections that we found in our model. It was as expected. The more women thought TV is real, and the more they watch TV, the more they endorse those gendered sexual scripts that are really common on TV, and the more they endorse these scripts, the more negative they felt about the sexual experiences they were having. Having a little, having a lot, they felt bad. And the less confident they felt they could be to protect themselves. And then there's one last thing I wanted to point out, and then I'll open time for questions. One of the things that's kept coming up, as you may have noticed throughout the various studies, is a sort of objectification of women component. We saw it a lot in our their content, and we're seeing it in our scales. And so we started to focus more specifically on that component. So we're also starting to explore the contributions of one particular media message, and that's media sexual objectification of women. We know that the media's feminine ideal is often a highly sexualized ideal, and we see it in a number of media. We see TV commercials with like Paris Hilton and our burger. We see music videos that have highly sexualized feminine appeal, magazine covers. In terms of actual numbers, how prevalent is this kind of content? We know that 76% of ads in men's magazines have sexually objectifying images of women. 64% of ads in adolescent girls' magazines have objectifying images of women. We see it in 71% of pop, hip-hop, R&B music videos, and 22% of commercials featuring women. So it's a prominent way that women are featured in the media. So what is the consequence of this? Theoretically, it's argued that societal exposure, societal prevalence of objectification of women eventually leads women to have that view of themselves. They internalize that notion that women are sexual objects, and they start to treat themselves as an object and to value themselves mainly for their physical appearance and their sexual appeal to others. And that's what's known as self-objectification. When we think about what that looks like, I like to think of this example. We think about all the many qualities that you might have as a woman, the many attributes you're proud of. You're persistent, you're loyal, you're honest, you're witty. And yes, you know, you're attractive, and yes, you're sexy, and you want to be seen as that way, but it's one of the many ways that you see yourself, right? With objectification, those other qualities don't matter, and the only thing that matters is that you're attractive and that you're sexy. And that's your key asset. And seeing yourself that way, that your only value to the world is your attractiveness and your sexiness, research shows is very problematic in a number of ways. So we know, for example, that sexualized women in general are often perceived poorly. They'll do lots of studies where they'll show people a sexualized image of a woman and then a non-sexualized image of a woman and ask questions about, you know, their competence or their morality or their skill, and they find that the sexualized woman is often perceived very poorly by other people. She's connected to more animal terms. She's seen as more feminine than a non-sexualized woman, but she's also seen as more promiscuous, more shallow, less warm, less competent, less moral, less trustworthy, less intelligent. She gives more blame and less empathy in rape stories, and she's seen as less human. So you know there's a lot of connections to how we see sexualized women in general, but we don't know a lot about how women who are, you know, sort of sexualized themselves view themselves and how that affects their relationships. So we're wondering, how does exposure to sexualized media content make people feel about themselves and their sexual relationships? It's theorized according to objectification theory that having this view of yourself as an object whose only value is your physical appearance has negative consequences. And for women, it's linked to disordered eating, it's linked to low body esteem, low self-esteem, it's linked to depressive affect, and it's linked to sexual dysfunction. Again, if your only value is your physical appearance, it has these negative side effects for your mental health. This is what we know from objectification theory. So we're wondering, what's the media's contribution to this? Could the media be contributing to women sort of self-objectifying themselves, and then could it have all those consequences? So one of the first studies that we've done, we've tried to look at this, and we've looked at magazines, for example, because I showed you all the high levels of objectification in magazines. So we've wondered, is women's exposure to women's magazines linked to them sort of treating themselves as sex objects, and does it have negative consequences for their sexual health? And I'll walk through those items in a minute. I just wanted to give you a feel for how we measure self-sexualization. So how do we measure something like that? Again, agree, disagree with statements like, during the day, I think about how I look many times. So you're focusing on your body, checking out your body all the time. We also look at body shame, things like, I feel like I must be a bad person when I don't look as good as I could. We look at their enjoyment of sexualization, things like, I love to feel sexy, and I like showing off my body. And finally, we look at the importance of sexual appeal to their self-worth. And here we give them a list of circumstances, like getting the highest grade on a test or not getting a summer job. And then 13 of those circumstances are appearance and sexual appeal related. And we ask them, how would they feel about themselves if this thing happened? if they were asked to be a model for a calendar, or if they got a zit on their face and couldn't leave the house, things like that. So we've got to get a sense of how much their sexual appeal is central to their self-worth. So how does our model look? It worked as we expected. So it was like, yay, we get results. Oh, that's unfortunate for women. So we did find in our analysis, we found that reading women's magazines was linked to all our measures of self-sexualization. So it was linked to greater body shame, greater body surveillance, always checking out yourself all the time, greater enjoyment of sexualization, feeling like a sex object, and attributing more importance to your self-worth to your sexual appeal. So it was linked to all of those. And then for women, these things affected their sexuality. So this self-sexualization, which is these things in the middle, was linked to greater sexual risk-taking among women, so not protecting themselves regularly, high number of casual sexual partners. It was linked to feeling more negative and more shameful about the sexual experiences you were having, a little, a lot, you're feeling bad. It was linked to feeling like you need alcohol in order to be sexual, and it was linked to less sexual assertiveness. You're not advocating for yourself. You're not saying what you desire or not. It's linked to less of that. And then in the last study, we looked at the role of social media, because sexual images just aren't on TV anymore, and it's just not in movies, but we see it a lot in social media, where it's their peers posting sexualized images of themselves and, you know, hotsy-totsy pictures or, you know, guys, a lot of shirtless pictures of men, and young people are consuming 30 to 60 minutes of this kind of social media a day. So they're constantly seeing images of their peers in these sexualized ways, so we're wondering, how does that affect them? Does that affect them in any way? So we tested, whether Facebook use contributes to college students' self-sexualization, and does it affect their mental health in the ways that are proposed by objectification theory. So we looked at the use of Facebook, how many hours per day, the kind of activities they do on Facebook. We looked at their Facebook use. Does that link to self-sexualization, those four variables I showed you before, and how does it affect things like mental health? Here we had anxiety, depression, hostility. Does that affect their self-esteem? And does that affect their body shame? And I apologize, the letters are really light. And we tested this model among 718 undergraduate women and 449 undergraduate men. And we found, one of the good things we found is that Facebook use in general is linked to higher self-esteem. So the more they're using Facebook, they reported feeling better about themselves, I guess because they're connecting with friends and sharing or whatever. That's one of the supposed benefits of Facebook. But if Facebook use leads to self-sexualization, which it often does, then that had negative outcomes. Facebook use made people feel more like a sexual object, and that was linked to lower self-esteem and more body shame for women. And then for men, we see the same thing. But for men, we see that Facebook use leads to self-sexualization, feeling like your appeal comes from your appearance and things like that, and that's linked to more mental health symptoms, less self-esteem, more body shame for men. So as I'm wrapping up, let me just summarize the findings. So we see that media use is a consistent predictor of students' sexual attitudes and their acceptance of those gendered sexual scripts that I talked about. It shapes their beliefs and expectations and even predicts their sexual behavior. And endorsing these gendered sexual scripts does have consequences. It's linked with greater sexual risk-taking among men. It's linked to greater acceptance and perpetration of sexual aggression among men. And it's linked to diminished sexual agency among women. And finally, we found that media use predicts greater self-sexualization, valuing yourself mainly for your physical sexual appeal among women and men, and that's linked to diminished sexual health, lower self-esteem, and more negative mental health. So this just presents an overview of some of the things that we've been doing to address those larger questions that I presented at the beginning. I do acknowledge a few things. I want to give you some takeaway messages. So first, I want to say, what I am not saying, I don't want you to come out of here with the wrong message. So I did not say that all media are bad, even though I talked about some of the problematic scripts. Not saying throw out your TV, not saying all media are bad. I think media can amuse us, inspire us, thrill us. I'm a movie buff. You know, I think media are very important. So I'm not saying that. And I'm also not saying that sex is bad. I once gave this talk, and an undergraduate came up to me afterwards. She's like, Dr. Ward, it sounds like you're saying sex is bad. It's like, no, didn't say sex is bad. You know, I think sexuality is an important, prominent, pleasurable part of life, but I think some of the scripts and messages about sex and how it's depicted in the media can be problematic. So that's what I'm not saying. So what I am saying, I think with these kind of findings, I think we need to acknowledge the power of media effects. We often may not think about them as sexual educators, but just because you're not thinking about it doesn't mean it's not happening. So one of my favorite quotes is, we are educated by the entertainment media, even if unintended by the source and unnoticed by the audience. So it's happening whether you're aware of it or not. So what can we do? We can steer our youth to content that matches our values. Like I said, we don't have to throw out all media or assume all media are bad, but we can steer youth to content that's appropriate for them. Just like in a library, not every book in a library is appropriate for young people. So we steer them to the books that are. Media are the same way. Steer them to the media that matches the values that you want them to have. And then finally, encourage youth to be critical media consumers. We as researchers, we talk about consuming media with your child, pointing out the messages, critiquing it. They may roll their eyes. They may say, oh, mom, but you're hoping they're hearing part of it. If you critique how they're treating her, how are they treating that woman? That's not nice. He's disrespecting her, whatever. Point out your values and be a critical media consumer. Hopefully your child will take that away eventually and be a critical media consumer themselves. Acknowledge that this work is a moving target. media are constantly changing. And, you know, we're studying one media, and that media is not important anymore, and other media are important, this research is evolving, we don't get to cover everything. And I also want to say that I'm not saying that media are the only thing that are shaping our sexuality, but I think it's one of the things. And we're continuing to follow and dodge that target as it moves along. So stay tuned, and thank you.